Back for session two. Lydia and I were just talking here on the break, and she was asking me about the photo that's up here behind the words they ask. And so about 3.5 years ago, I climbed on an airplane in Miami and landed in the dirty, dusky Caribbean in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and was picked up by my team. I had a group of 12 with us. We loaded up all of our luggage and kind of wandered off to this hostel that I found at the base of the mountain, and climbed into our bunks. And the next morning, as we took our first towel bath instead of a real shower, we loaded up our backpacks, and we had a group of 6 Haitian friends, many that I love dearly, and I'm anxious to see again. But we have our 6 Haitian friends and 12 Americans, and we start off on a 3-day journey. And so the first day, I made it about a mile. I had been working out for 3-4 months beforehand. I'd done 17 miles on a treadmill at 45 incline. I made it 1 mile with my pack before my friend T-Ben took it off my back and carried it the other 3 days. And as we journeyed that first day, we went from 2,000 feet above sea level to about 7,000 feet above sea level. We started off at 7 a.m. It was hot, but not too hot for Haiti standards in March. Started this trek, and T-Ben took my pack. We walked through this forest area and end up on this road. This road would be the next 15 hours as we went up that 5,000 feet. And the thing is, you would go up 100 feet and you'd go down 200 feet. Then you'd go up 300 feet. You'd plateau for 100 feet. And then you'd go down 200 feet and up another 400 feet. I never in my life thought that I wanted to die more than that first day. 6 months prior to this, I had done part of this on motorcycle from a different area of Haiti to where our destination was. And I started off on a moto at 7 a.m., came back at 9 p.m. I'd been thrown off the moto 3 times. We'd gone all the way up, and I was exhausted, but I was like, this is what we need to do. So this photo I took right before the last ascent of our first day. So we're standing here. Our destination goal is that antenna up on the right. You see it by the clouds? You can barely make it out. This is about a 3-mile stretch that was the last push of the day. And I was done. We had run out of water. We had we'd had to call one of our friends to bring water to us to restock us because we were just out. And exhausted beyond exhausted. And as we got 3/4 of the way up this hill, my friend Richard says, wow, isn't this beautiful? And I mean, if you ask me, I'd show you all kinds of photos from the day. It's absolutely gorgeous. And all these rocks are beautiful. And I said, yes, but all these rocks are also what's killing us right now. And really, this is an analogy for the ask. A lot of times, this feels to a lot of people like walking 3 miles uphill over rocking ground at the end of a 17-mile hike in 100-degree heat and being out of shape and being exhausted. Sometimes the ask can feel that way. But the ask is also something you have to prepare for and you have to be willing to go after and you have to be willing to sacrifice. Because this three-day hike, day two, was the summit of Pic Lacelle in Haiti, the highest peak in Haiti. And about 9,500 feet above sea level. There's only about four or five groups that go up there a year. Our group went there and then down the third day all the way to our base camp, which was at 200 feet above sea level. So within that, our group of 12 raised $80,000 towards our new hospital in Haiti as a part of a fundraising hike. So there wasn't an option to stop, right? And there's not an option. When you're in ministry and you're doing ministry fundraising, there's not an option to go, yeah, I'm done. I'm not gonna ask this donor to engage in the work that we're doing. There's just not that option. God's called you into this. He's going to give you the strength to push through this. But you have to have that mindset that you're going to hike that last hill. And it may kill you, but you're going to get there. And it's a beautiful thing. It's an amazing thing. And it's a tough thing to do as well. So fundraising is proclaiming what we believe in such a way that we offer other people an opportunity to participate with us in our vision and our mission. Honoring Allen. If you want to pick up one of the best books on fundraising, it's Honoring Allen's Spirituality and Fundraising. It's a short read, but it's a really good read that really brings to light a lot of that. But we offer people an opportunity to participate. You know, when we ask them to give and get involved, we offer them that opportunity. We say, hey, let's climb the hill together because we're going to be able to build a hospital that's going to save thousands of lives and empower a local community. So, does anybody know what this car is?
Porsche.
It's a Porsche. It's a Porsche 911. Do you know why it's a unique car? It's the most stolen car in all of Europe. It's a Porsche 911. So, I really want to imagine that my friend Robert has a Porsche 911 sitting in his driveway in Aurora, Colorado. He loves that Porsche. He has saved all of his life to get this Porsche. And Robert looks out his window one night at about 10 o'clock and sees two guys like with flashlights like looking around his Porsche. Right? And he's going, they're going to steal my Porsche. I got to do something. So I know Robert doesn't own any firearms. So he grabs his baseball bat or his tennis racket. Probably a little bit more tennis than baseball. And he runs outside and he says, stop. And the guys look at him. Robert's got the keys to the Porsche in his pocket. And the guys look at him and they say four words. Robert's like, drops his tennis racket, takes out his keys, throws him the keys, gives him a Porsche. I'd like to see that. I would love to see that. But it's also a good analogy of a scriptural passage that really comes into play when we start talking about asking people to engage in the work and asking them for resources. It comes from Luke 19, verse 28. And I'll read it for you this morning. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethphage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two disciples, saying to them, go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, why are you untying it? Say, the Lord needs it. Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he told them, and as they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, why are you untying the colt? And they replied, the Lord needs it. Four words, right? We do the ministry of fundraising and asking because the Lord needs it. That colt in biblical times may not have been equal value as a Porsche 911 today, but in that moment, never been ridden, valuable asset of this owner that was just asked, the Lord needs it. And the owner says, okay, take it. That doesn't happen. Sean will tell you in other countries, if you decide to take somebody's donkey or their horse and you walk into the village and untie it, you're probably going to get beat almost to death. You might get on it before you get drug off of it. But it's not what happens. But this is a great example of our call to asking people to engage, is that the Lord needs it. Not Cameron, not Robert, not Lydia, not Lexi, not Sean. The Lord needs it. And that's why we ask. That's why we engage in this process. Because it's transformational, it's not transactional. You know, it's transformational. You have to focus in on this transformational situation. And so it's not transactional. You cannot make this about a transaction. It cannot be that I ask them and they give. And you can't shortchange the transformational process. That this is an engagement with an individual because they love the Lord, they love the work that you're involved in, but you have to cultivate this. It's not something where you just walk in and go, okay, like we've met twice, now I'm going to ask you for $100,000. I have a really good friend who's also a good donor, has participated with us in multiple different projects over the years. And one of the first times I met with him, we sat down and we started talking, and he goes, you know, and he named a big name person that I won't name from a ministry. He goes, he flew in and, you know, he was so bold and he just said, well, you're going to give me $1 million for this. And my friend John's like, John could write the check for $1 million, by the way. John's like, I'm not going to give that to him because it's transactional. It's not respecting the relationship. And it's not transformational. There's nothing that compels me that the Lord is speaking to my heart that I'm supposed to do this, because the individual approaching John approached it from a purely transactional standpoint. When you approach a donor, it is about the relationship and not the transaction. Because if you make it about a transaction, they may give that one time, but they'll never give again. Or they may give once or twice. And if all you do is continually this transactional process, it won't grow them in their relationship with the Lord, and it won't grow you, your affinity as your ministry or your relationship. Make it about them. Identify their passion. So as you start to, no matter where you're at in the process, you know, I met with a young guy yesterday who's getting ready to join us in Malawi next year, and he's working through, he needs to provide a list of 200 names. There's a point in time where you'll sit down and you may have to draw up a list of names when you first start into mission work or ministry work to identify those who you could ask to get involved and engaged in your work. The greater opportunity is to be able to sit down with them and understand who they are and what they're passionate about. And the question becomes, and this is a key question, is, you know, Robert, what about this work is most meaningful to you? If the Lord provided you $100,000 to give away, that he said, Robert, I need you to give $100,000 away, what would you do with it? What are you most passionate about? You know, never use the word passion, but what's most meaningful to you? You know, I sat down with a banker years ago, and we started talking, and it was the second time I've met him. And I was in a organizational situation where I needed to really get to the next step. And really, you can do this conversation in 15 minutes with somebody. You can sit down, do your intros, have good conversation about life and what's going on. And hey, Lydia, you're a junior business major, wonderful, great that you're at LCU. You know, I'm passionate about ministry, not trying to figure out what the Lord's leading you. But really, Lydia, what's most meaningful to you about what you're doing right now and where the Lord's leading? And if the Lord gave you $100,000 that you needed to give away, what would you do with that? Because right now, as each of you are sitting here, and as you're thinking about it, you're going, okay, what would I do with $100,000? What's most meaningful to me if I needed to give it away? And right there is where your heart is and your passion is. And so at that moment, the banker looked up at me and he said, you know, I have a grandson who is special needs. And he's 3 years old and we're trying to really help our son and daughter-in-law with this. I was like, that's really exciting and admirable that you would do that. Had nothing to do with what we do in ministry, in our work, you know. And I said to him, I said, thank you for sharing that. That's such an amazing story. I'm glad you're at a position where you can help your son and daughter-in-law right now. So what about what we do draws you into where we're at right now as a ministry? And so he shared that. So I was able to, one, identify his true passion, but then two, kind of identify why he loves what we do. Because this is about kingdom. This is not about Cameron. It's not about NAMI Congo. It's not about Compassion International or whatever ministry or mission organization or yourself if you serve overseas. It's not about you. It's about the kingdom. So, and if I can help connect that banker to other resources that can help him, that builds that relationship and that trust and moves it along. But literally, I gave you a three-day seminar in about a matter of 15 minutes. There's a whole lot more that goes into that, but that gives you the idea that from start one to start Z, if you have 15 to 20 minutes with somebody, you know, if you have a high potential person in your community, ask them for 15 minutes. And you can have that conversation with them in 15 minutes. And being able to identify where they're passionate, whether that passion lines up with what you do, and being able to take that step towards funding something that God is leading you towards. And then from there, you really take the next step for a proposal for their gift. You know, some people get, like they're the gunslinger, right? They're like, oh, he just said he's passionate about our Billy Savings and Loan Program. Draw! You know, I'm going to fire. I'm going to ask. I'm going to dump it right now. I'm going to, you know, put all the cards on the table, and I'm going to ask him for a gift for this. Boo! You know? Take your time, build that relationship, talk to them about what is happening in that ministry area. If their passion, if you've identified their passion and it is something in your ministry, then talk about that ministry and talk about what is going on with that and talk about where you're headed and the vision and the passion you have for that. But then ask them if you can come back with a proposal for how they might get involved and give a gift to that ministry area. Be able to engage in that way and not just feel like you have to close at that moment. You're going to have more success if you're able to step away and even write up an email and say, hey, it was so great to meet you today and talk with you. Here's a few ideas about specifically about what we need in that area. Can we follow through with that? So make a proposal for their gift, because it's going to make a bigger impact. You're going to be able to more concisely tell them what the need is and how to give. Assuming that they loved what you proposed and they gave a gift for that proposal, thank them. You'd be surprised how many people they stop right. They asked. Generic receipt letter goes out from the office, and they don't thank them. They don't shoot them a text. They don't call them. They don't send them a thank you note card. You know, my whole process with where we're at right now is first-time donor gets a thank you note card. If it's over $1,000, they get a phone call. If it's a regular monthly gift, like $200 or $500, it's a phone call. So you have to make sure that you thank them. One of my wife's biggest pet peeves lately, and I'll talk to Gen Z and some of the millennials, most of you are Gen Z though in here, is that we would go through these graduation series of friends who are graduating from high school or college, and we'd send a gift to them, and they wouldn't acknowledge the gift. Robert's shaking his head yes. They won't write a thank you note. You have to thank people. Like, I don't care what your parents taught you or what your parents allowed you to do. You actually have to thank people for giving to your ministry. Like, this is a part of the process of fundraising. You have to take that step, because if you don't, they're not going to give you another gift. They're not going to be passionate about what you're doing. I've relate that back to a story where a wealthy couple trying to figure out what they were going to do with their estate. Gave three $500,000 gifts to three different organizations. One of them didn't thank them. One of them sent them a thank you card. The other ones picked up the phone, called them, invited them down to their community center, gave them a tour, took them out to lunch, thanked them, told them about the mission and vision of what they were doing and why God was working in their work. Who do you think got the estate gift? The third one, right? So thanking donors is utmost priority. And you have to be able to take that step in that process, because that's part of the ask. That's part of ministry of fundraising. And follow up. Now, that last story, I told you, obviously, they connected all the dots with the follow-up. But, for example, where we're at in our work in Malawi right now, there's five Americans on the field, six joining us full-time early in the seventh next year. And this last year has been the biggest focus for me has been follow-up. That yes, we can thank them, we can ask them, we can thank them, all these different things. But if we don't follow up with how their gift made a difference, then yeah, we just missed an opportunity to close the loop and start the process over again. So you have to follow up. So for example, you have to be able to shoot the photos and send the email, or drop the photos in the mail and send them if you've asked for a gift that's going to accomplish a program. So, for example, Ryan and I tag-teamed a donation this last spring for $30,000 for a coffee roaster for our ministry program. One of our sustainable projects is coffee roasting, and our work had outgrown the current capacity of our current coffee roaster, and so we needed $30,000 to buy this new roaster. Ryan and I both kind of identified a couple different people. We both made the ask. Each one of them gained $15,000 just within 30 days. It was an amazing, cool God story. But it took us 3 months, 3.5 months, by the time we ordered the roaster and had it shipped from South Africa to Malawi to get it installed. We had to get some parts, all those different things to get it up and running. But the first thing I did was I sent a video to the donor who gave the $15,000. Like, it's that important to maintain that relationship and to follow up. Most people go, oh, well, you know, I'll get back to them someday. Or, oh, yeah, they get busy with other ministry things. And it's like, you can't. Like, if somebody gives you a gift specifically for a designated project, but really any type of gift, you need to be able to follow up and say, here's the impact. Here's the impact of what your gift did. Because it's about them, it's not about you. You have to be able to follow up with them. And so that's been the biggest task over the last year with the guys in Malawi, has been helping them follow up with donors, helping them continue to communicate with donors about the impact of the funds that have been received and what's happening over in Malawi. And it's inspired people. It's inspired people to give more and more regularly to see that. So you have to be able to take that opportunity to follow up. And then you ask them again. This is the fun part, because you get an opportunity to engage them again in the work of the Lord. And they're expecting it, or they're wanting it. If they're not at a capacity to give again, they'll tell you. Or they'll say, hey, I need to wait till XYZ happens, and then I can give again. But don't assume because they gave a $70,000 gift last year that, like, we shouldn't ask them this year, should we? No, we should ask them for a $100,000 gift this year, right? That there is that follow. If you do the process, if you ask them, if you thank them, if you follow up with them, you're still building that relationship with them. You're still earning trust. You're still communicating. You're still in relationship with them. Ask them again to give to what God's doing. If it's a regular monthly donor, it may be a different ask. But if it's a gift for a project in a project-driven situation, ask them again, because they're more than likely going to give you the next gift that you need to make that happen, because they saw the impact, right? If you give me $10 and say, Cameron, go do XYZ, and I go off and do it, and I come back and I show you pictures, and yeah, I bought a coat for a kid at the homeless shelter down the street, and I gave it away. Could you give me $30 so I can go buy 3 coats? Good to go. Oh, yeah, because Cameron just showed me the pictures of the kid that he bought the one coat for. So I'm going to do it again. So that's that process when it comes to asking them again to give and get involved. And this is the hard part, when, especially if you're serving in the mission field or in parachurch ministries, don't get lazy. Like, it is really easy to just kind of get in your regular zone of, this is how we do things, and I'm not going to follow up, and I'm not going to go back through the process, and I'm not going to ask them again. That it's like, oh, they're good, they've been given this, they've been doing this. No, you need to continue to restart this process over and over again. That it is a process that continues. It doesn't stop. And so don't take your foot off the gas just because, oh, you know, Bobby Sue gave $500,000 last year. If so, give me her name and number and telephone. No, I want to call her. But, continue the process and continue building that relationship, and don't get lazy in the process because you think everything's good with your donor. But also don't take advantage. You know, there are situations where you need to understand your donor and have that donor relationship tight enough that you don't feel like you're taking advantage of that situation. And that takes time and effort and communication. You know, you start building relationships, and you'll get to the point in time where John gives you the garage code to his garage so you can get in the house because he's still at work, and you're coming to visit for the evening and have dinner, and you're sitting around the dinner table. And you may walk in and be, I'm prepared to ask him for $15,000 for this. And John and Mary walk in and say, you know what? This just happened in life, and this just happened in life, and like this whole world just fell apart. And you spend the whole evening talking and praying. One of the biggest blessings that I've had in the last 20 years is actually pastoring donors and pastoring pastors that are with partner churches. That's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to understand what is happening in people's lives and understand their needs and also understand where they're at and ministering to them as you build a relationship, as God, you know, one of my best friends, David, is the guy who drug me into the 3-day hike and $80,000 fundraiser. Who's on my board of directors for our last ministry. But David and I's relationship have gone to the next level. And he's been really interested in what we're doing in Namibia. But he's had, you know, he has 2 kids in private college right now. He's got one that just got married and is having a baby. You know, all these different components where I know David's capacity. You know, he's that executive vice president of one of the largest healthcare companies in the country. But I also know that for me to push him right now, for me it's to continue to build that trust and that relationship and not take advantage of that relationship. David knows what our needs are. He knows what our passions are. You know, he wants to come to Africa to see what was happening. But it's also one of those where if I was to push and try to take advantage of our relationship, one, that would damage our relationship, but two, it would not honor the process of donor relations and cultivation. But David and I will stay friends until the end of time, until one of us passes on, whether we're engaged in ministry together or not. You know, Sean and Robert and Matt, you know, those types of relationships where you get a chance to really get to build that, you don't take advantage of them. And so you have to pray. The Holy Spirit has to lead a lot of what you do in this process with asking people for donations. Because he'll prompt you at the right times to make the right asks. So asking people to give is the right ask at the right time with the right donor. That is what is the key. I've had a lot of different friends that have entered into fundraising ministry, and they say, yeah, my organization's given me these, you know, benchmarks or like I have to make this much in asks. And I'm like, that's not a ministry you want to be with, because that's not the heart of fundraising for Kingdom Impact. The heart is letting the Holy Spirit move. Yes, you still have a responsibility to ask, and you better ask, or you won't have a job when it comes down to it. But you have to let the Holy Spirit move in that process and not take advantage. And the number one reason why donors stop giving, they don't know how their gift is being used. You know, that's what it all comes down to. When you're making an ask, is making sure that they understand how their gift was used and what the impact is. But that's the number one reason that people stop giving, is they don't know how their gift made a difference. If you can't communicate that and follow up with them, then don't ask them for the gift. If you're working with a team like I am on the field, and I've done this for 20 years, I've been stateside with all of the different partners that I've worked with overseas, whether it was the 8 years with medical missions or the 10 years working with different work in Haiti, that's your number one goal, is to make sure that you can tell the story of how their gift made an impact. And so that's the biggest way of making a difference. So that's the end of session two, a little bit shorter than session one.
I got a question for you.
How
do you keep that from this? It's almost like a system. It's almost like a track or something.
Yeah.
How do you keep that from being manipulation?
That's a good question. You have to get to a place in this process where I think it really goes back, Sean. Let's see if I can go backwards. You know, the don't take advantage. You know, when it comes to manipulation, it's very easy to get, you know, I stepped away from my first ministry in 2009. And when I did, like, a number of these relationships just disappeared. And at that point in time, you kind of take a look at, was that relationship built on reality or built on the ministry? What's the relationship like? And I think that that's where it comes down to manipulation is, I don't even know the definition for it. I wish somebody would pull up Google and define it for me. Is that point where you take advantage. You know, you take advantage of where they're at. And I think that that is a hard, that's a very fine line in the sand, where you have to be really respectful. You have to be okay not asking. And I think that that's how you make it not about manipulation, is you have to be okay to walk into a meeting, being ready to ask and have that conversation and walk away not asking. And be okay with the Lord saying that that's not the right time. Manipulation comes into the fact of when you decide that you're going to ignore that prompting, and you're going to ask anyways, and you're going to try to close on this without, you know, a real connection that they're ready to take the step. And I rely on the Holy Spirit quite a bit in the ministry of fundraising to understand that.
So would you say it's the gift is not more important than the relationship?
Yeah.
Say it that way.
Yeah, every single time. Yeah.
Is there such a thing as donor fatigue?
Oh yeah, there's definitely a thing as called donor fatigue.
Yeah, I was just curious, and I was wondering. I'm very afraid of asking for money.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, you're giving us like really awesome skills, and I'm loving it. I think the thing that's running at the back of my mind is this idea of how do I keep going back to the same person, to the same donors, like. Is there a point when I feel like I should cut it off so that they don't get tired of me, or like do they ever get tired of like asking for money kind of stuff?
Sure. I think the thing in that realm, and it kind of goes back to Sean's manipulation question here as well, is the very first lesson, and I'm going to close all of our sessions today with a quote from my good friend Clark Dickerson, which is, your next best gift is where you got your last gift. There is donor fatigue, but oftentimes donor fatigue happens not because of your asking, but because of all the other factors that I just mentioned. You know, if you're not communicating the story well, if you're not following up, if you're not thanking them, if you're not building a relationship, that's where you get into donor fatigue. That's where you get into real donor fatigue, where it's like all they do is show up and ask. And I don't really want to meet with Cameron today. No donor should ever feel that way about when you call them. They'll know why you're calling them, right? This is part of the bane of my existence, is they know why I'm showing up. Like, it's not, there's nothing hidden here. But if they don't want to meet with me, it's because I haven't honored my relationship with them and I haven't done what I'm teaching. I haven't properly thanked them. I haven't followed up with them. I haven't appreciated them. You know, one of the things that I didn't go into in depth here, but you need to appreciate them. So the unique process for me with that is I find out what gets them excited, or what, you know, besides their passion, right, that we talked about earlier, but what interests do they have? What hobbies do they have? What do they talk about all the time? And then I try to find unique ways to honor my relationship with them. So I had a guy, Matt, who, not that Matt, but another Matt that went to Haiti with me several years, and major donor with our organization, and all he did was talk about the cockfights in Haiti. Well, you know, we're not going to take Americans to a cockfight in Haiti. Like, it's not. You know, you see the rings, they're along the side of the road, all those different things. Sometimes at night we drive by and, you know. So, but one day I was at the beach and we were having dinner as a team, and all the guys came out with all their wares to sell. And so I'm just kind of looking around, having a conversation, making sure the Americans with me aren't getting ripped off. But one of my guys who sells all the time, Moana, we call him Moana from, or Maui from Moana, he's got a big painting of a cockfight. And I'd never seen one. Like, in all my trips, I'd never seen a big painting of a cockfight. So I'm like, there we go. So I bought the painting of the cockfight, rolled it up, stuck it in my bag, got back to the U.S., put it in a tube with a note to Matt, shipped it off to Ohio. It's those types of things where you have to do the process of honoring those donors so you don't end up with donor fatigue, and building that relationship. I will tell you that there are donor fatigue after different seasons and different crises. So, you know, Haiti's one of those examples where it's this tragedy and that tragedy, and all of a sudden there's, you know, donor fatigue because everybody's given and it's still the same situation. But it's also one of those things that affects your own ministry. If you're not communicating well, if you're not building that relationship and following up. If you get on my LinkedIn page, you know, my whole mantra is, building relationships for kingdom impact. That's what we're supposed to be doing as fundraisers. Building relationships for kingdom impact. And so from that standpoint, yeah, donor fatigue's real, but it's also very avoidable. Other questions? Anybody got an example of an ask that went bad? There are those. Who's ever sat across the table and asked somebody for money? A few of you. So that's a big part of this process, right? You cannot do fundraising without doing that. And so I encourage you with that. Other questions? Okay. Take 10.
Strip legs. Yep. For more content like this, go to lcu.edu.